recording?
Yes, it's recording.
I want to finish the coupe, but first, just I think it might be helpful just to go over kind of just what the seder was of this siman. A lot of different things, and the number of dinim that seem to apply in some cases didn't apply in other cases. So just to give it some perspective, the title of the whole siman was Din Isser Shenafal Toch Heter. We're talking about whether there's contact between Isser and Heter, and the question is there transience of flavor? So if we just look at, you know, sometimes it takes a step back and just kind of look over what we did. So the Simon Kupay, Sif Aleph, is talking about where you have transference via liquid that's cold, right? Kavush, kavushal. Usually we've talked, most of the time we talked, again, we covered some of these in Basra Chalav, but in Tarovis, most of the time we talked about transference through heat, right? Transference cooking something together, things got cooked together. But here in Simon Kupay, again, I'm going to give you like this an overview of what this siman is talking about, so you just get perspective. So, as I said, Sif Aleph talks about where there is transference with actually in the absence of heat. Right? Sif Aleph, there's no heat, it's something that soaks in liquid. You have whatever, a piece of meat soaking in milk or whatever else, the Isushin, Nosra, Heter, Veisla. So now we know, if it's on, it's cold, there's no heat at all. But if it's long enough, if you leave it in there long enough, so we assume that there can be transference of flavor, the flavor is imparted, even without the medium of heat, right? That's what the Sif Aleph was about. How long does it have to sit? So we discussed 24 hours, but if it's something sharp, it might only be 18 minutes, right? I think those are the details. But just in terms of, that's what the Sif Aleph is about. Sif Beis and Sif Gimel, again, talking about mafli to mafli, again, the same thing, transference or imparting of flavor. There it is through heat, okay? But we've made a distinction, really, what is the nature of the heat? Is there a difference in Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Iri Kli Rishon? Right, there you are talking about hot liquid involved, not necessarily cooking. Again, a Kli Sheni, we assume Kli Sheni and Mevashel, but there can still be transience of flavor. Iri, we had a discussion whether that's like Kli Rishon, it's not like Kli Rishon, it's not Kli Sheni, and so on. But again, that you're talking about there also the transience of flavor via heat, but the distinction between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. Sif Dalid, moved on to when we're talking about when you have Rotev, okay, when you have, again, there is something moving it around. That's the bishul, or even the that which moves this around is some type of rotev. And the distinction that emerges there in the beginning of Sif Dalet is the distinction between bishul, where you have liquid involved, which we had in the first three sifim all had liquid. Sif Aleph was cold liquid, right? Kavush kavushol. Sif Beis and Gimel was kli rishon, kli sheni, iri kli rishon, but there was heat involved, okay, with the liquid. Sif Dalet moves on when there's no liquid, sli, okay, where there's a point of contact between the things that are hot, but there's not any liquid that's moving anything around, okay? And that's why the Chaber begins Sif Dalet by saying, Mezra Mor Kishnovel Toh HaTavshel, which I wrote the Molech Plato Zizum Arba, HaTavshel, Aval Isser, Shnovel Al Tzli, and so on. That's where you have transference of flavor without any medium of liquid whatsoever. So you see this kind of a progression, a logical progression in what's going on in this siman. And again, in the context of that, we distinguish between whether we're talking about something which is shamein, something which is kochosh, right? Is there fatty substance in the isser that can move things around? Again, that distinction was mefapeya. Sivav, really again, is also part of that unit, okay? But Sivav brings in yet another thing to consider is we consider Tatar Gavar, what's on the bottom, what's on the top, right? So that's the the progression there. Then Siv Zion brings in effect, another factor to consider is the Isser Machmas Atzma Isser Balua. Again, we spent a lot of time on that in Basar B'Cholav, but that comes in here with that long shach and so on. What do we consider Basar B'Cholav? And there's a difference in Isser Balua and Isser Machmas Atzmo, and the rule that you can't, something which is Balua can't go out and do more than the original Isser and so on. Sivches was only a technicality. Sivches was the case with the kidney. We proposed that if there's something which is a Dabar HaMafsik, in between. That case was the membrane, right? In between where the chelav was and where the kidney was. So that, you know, does that matter or does that not matter? Mechaber says that it does. Rav Moses Machmer. And then Siftes introduces to a totally different type of transience of flavor, not through not only not through liquid and not through heat, but you know, but through something totally different, and that is melicha, right? The salt transfer, you know, how does salt transfer? So that's the next. That's what Siftes and a lot of discussion. The Achronim, if you saw it, the post you saw, do some of these things. Does kachosh and shomein play a role by melicha also? Right. That was part of the discussion that we had. Does the, for example, the Ramah himself presented a kula, which he didn't accept, although he did accept the Mishas of Chag, is that kol melicha eino seres rak kedei klipa. Melicha does not, because melicha is less intense than heat lechora, right? Melicha can transfer flavor, but not as intensely or as powerfully as heat. Therefore, there are kulas, again, the question we'll look at today, Sif Yud also talks about, you know, both things are salt, only one thing salt. And Sif Yud Aleph, that we'll finish up with now, discusses whether Tatar Gavar plays a role by Melicha. So you see, you know, all these, you have these general rules, there are different rules, and we say Melicha Kiroseach. Okay, I'm not going into what we discussed in Hilchos Sabbos V'Cholov, how salty is salty. Remember we had the different shitas over there, but it's just too salty to eat, or it's salty enough to preserve. Remember we had the and then the further question, when does it take effect? We had that round at that time, if you remember, that it didn't take, you know, the round's not, it takes 18 minutes for the first kick in. Those are details we discussed there. But again, within the world of Melicha Kiroseach, so the question becomes, do these same principles, and it's pretty clear from the post that they don't all apply. They don't all apply in all the cases. So that's kind of the progression of this SIF up until this point. I just wanted to mention, we also distinguished, the Ramah did anyway, distinguished between, you know, with regards to Melicha, between the food and between Kalim. Okay? Although the Ramah is, so there are distinctions. He mentioned also the end of Siv Zion, right? Kli Shabala Iser. So there are distinctions. We're talking about food, and we're talking about kalim. So I just wanted to mention that we assume that even by we're getting about Belicha for a moment, but even in the realm of transfer through heat, things touching, okay? If with kalim, there has to be some sort of rotin or something to move it through. There's two kederis, there are most of them. Two kederis that touch each other, so that does not transfer the flavors. I just wanted to mention that that is the basic heter. I think we mentioned it maybe when we learned about Suhala, I forgot already. That is the basic heter, the whole concept of double wrapping something. You know, when you put something in an oven, what's the whole lumdus? Did we discuss that? I think we mentioned one. About double wrapping. Let's say, you know, just came on the airplane, you know, you get the food, it's double wrapped. Okay, some of the airlines that have less experience with kosher food, that haven't gotten it right. You know, a lot of the food is stored it's frozen, I guess, in advance, and then they heat it up. But all I can tell you, when I was flying back from Poland, so they had the food, it was double wrapped, everything was fine, but they give you that little cup of water, you know, so it was ice, it was completely frozen. The food was hot, but they don't have the hang of it exactly right. But what's the lumdus of double wrapping? So again, because you're cooking something in an oven, a kosher food, in some big oven with I don't know, basu chalav, tarfas, whatever other food there is. So there is, there is transience of flavor, but only to the outer piece of tinfoil. Outer piece of tinfoil is taka as a blias iser. But that blias iser, the outer piece of tinfoil, cannot transfer to the inner piece of tinfoil. There's no rota, there's nothing to conduct it, so to speak, in between. So two, and as I said, they're each root sort of like a kli, the outer tinfoil and the inner tinfoil. So the inner tinfoil touches your food directly. That's okay, because that's the idea of double wrapping. It's like shtei keder, it's like two kalim, where there's no transcendence in between. I just want to mention that point, because that's nogea. Once in a while, somebody's in a certain place, and there's a shas and chak, you want to wraps, or you want to cook something, or whatever, you have no choice, you're cooking, you double wrap, that's the lumbus behind it, yeah.
Often when you open up double wrap foods, you do find moisture, just that does...
Right, but I think that moisture is coming, I think, from your food, which is within the first layer, not from the outer food. I
mean, it's not really between the two layers.
Right, that's what I'm saying, it's usually on the top of the foil that's on top of your food. It's moisture from there. So, and that's the idea of it. That's what I just want to mention that there. Okay, so let's, I just want to give you this kind of overview because I know it's a lot of material and these long shots and tazes here. But that's how you look it through. Just the different ways, if I had to identify the siman, it's different ways that flavor is imparted. Again, whether it's through kavush, whether it's through kli rishon, kli sheni, iri kli rishon, sli. Does it make a difference if it's shaman and kachosh and so on? And we seem to have some steers a little bit. And it's not steers because there are different rules that apply in different situations. Okay, so let's just finish up the last few simonim here. So I said that, yeah. So Sif Yud, the Ramah brings up the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says, "Isur v'heter shnei meluchim." Vafilu iser maliach v'heter tofel. I'm a heter meluch, but iser tofel ain't a tzarich ella adochah. Okay. And the Ramah is make only makom hefsed. The Ramah is make all the way that. Again, there's imparting a flavor if both the heter and the iser is salty, or just even just the iser is salty and the heter is not. Through malicha. Again, some are machmir, but the Ramah says makom hefsed, you're allowed to be makel. Okay, that's what Rekiv Eger said. He just says makom hefsed. Rekiv Eger notes it doesn't say hefsed merubah, just says hefsed. So even a lighter hefsed would be sufficient. Okay, sif yud aleph. Zeh shomarnu b'isav aliyach v'heter tofel shemu shomein oser ad shibo shishim levat l'davka kishar isav aliyach l'mata v'heter tofel l'mala mishum d'tato agavar v'mohoya v'heter tofel l'mata v'isav aliyach l'mala eina oser ela k'dei klipa. The Ramah, Mechaberada says that which again the fatty isav that's salty will impart the flavor to the dover heter which requires shishim. Okay, that's only when it's on the bottom and the heter is on the top because of tato gavar. But if the heter, which is not salty, is on the bottom and the iser is on the top, then it's only a matter of kadei klipa. Okay? Yeah, so in other words, tato gavar does play a role, bottom line, with regards to malicha as well. The Ramah says, v'yesh o'cholkin, v'om de malicha ein chilekim ulamala olamato, v'hochinov. Ramah says no. There's no by malicha tato gavar ilo gavar doesn't play a role. That's a din only over there. But by malicha we don't make such a distinction. Okay, and therefore even if the fatty iser which is salty is on the top and the heter is on the bottom, still it'll transfer the taste. And then the Ramah says that's the minute. Why should that be? So the Shach explains to Kot Memalim because again when you're the source, so to speak, of the transferring of the flavor is heat. Again, I just gave you that overview right here. We're talking there's no heat. It's malicha, right? If the source of transferring flavor is heat, so then, like the Gemara says, you know, then it matters which way does the heat go. Heat can be cooled off, right? By the maker, right? The heat, that's the sugam sachem, right? The heat can be cooled off. If something was, even if you have food that was mamish off the fire, but if you put it now together or on top of food, that's cold, so it'll cool it off. Right? That's the nature. Heat can be cooled off. So therefore, if you have hot food and you put it on top of cold food, let's say, some gravy, some hot gravy, hot soup, and you put it on potatoes, or you put it on rice or something like that, which is cold, so then the cold food on the bottom will cool off the hot food that was just placed on top, and therefore limit its capacity to transfer flavor. Okay. However, malicha is not... doesn't become unmalicha, maluach, doesn't become unmaluach by coming to contact with food, does that malucha. It's not the same thing. The Shach suggests that's the chiluk. If the salt has the capacity to transfer the flavor, I would understand that, but if the salt has the capacity to transfer the flavor, again, we'll discuss how much salt we're talking about, okay? And again, you know, even though it's comparable to malicha according to some, it's comparable to malicha by kashering, you know, by removing dam, but it's a separate realm. It's not the two dinim are not related. Just that salt has this capacity, salt has that capacity. So, Kabbalah did it a favor. It made salt have the same, you know, the same way it pulls out dam and it transfers flavor. It's the same thing. But in any event, by putting this thing with other things, the capacity of the salt to transfer the flavor is not weakened by its being associated with stuff that isn't salty. So therefore, it doesn't make a difference which way tata gavar, ilah gavar. You follow? That's what Shach said. That's why, in other words, the the only way to get rid of whatever power the salt has to transfer heat, to transfer flavor, is by washing it off, getting rid of it altogether. So again, there you see, according to this approach, according to Chumash Rama, Melicha Take is not the same here. And the rules of Tatagavar and Lagavar, that does not play a role by Melicha the same way it does by Tzli, because again, the power of the salt is not weakened because it's put together with something that doesn't have salt. Hashanah can only deal with heat with something that's not heat, so Teva is it cools off. So that's the Shach explains why the Mechaber is, is Machmer, and see if you're out. See if you're Beis. Okay, you have cheese. Okay, I think we discussed it one time also, which were made in defuse. The defuse is a mold. In other words, something where you to shape the cheese. You put till it solidifies into cheese. So it's put in some sort of a mold. So the guy had this cheese. Dish, this cheese contraption, which is not kosher, okay, and you put the Jew put his cheese in there, even if it was salted, it's mutter. So says the Mechaber, okay? And Ramah adds, Ruhu adin, im nimlach heter b'shar kliyisur. Ramah doesn't argue. Ramah says, it's not only, it's even if you have, some other heter and some other kliyisur, even if it's okay. And why is that? So Ramah explains, because not perforated. The ain maliach karoseh kol kach lahaflit min hakli mashabaluah b'tocho. Okay, again, he's limiting maliach karoseh in the progression of the overview that I just gave you. So here's another limitation on maliach karoseh. The kula before the limitation was that tato gavar doesn't help. That was a chumra according to Ramah. Here, Ramah is not arguing with the mechaber. He's explaining, and he says the ain maliach karoseh kol kach. That rule of Maliach Karoseach, it's not enough, the parallel is not strong enough such that it can actually bring flavor out of a kli. In other words, lahaflit min hakli mashabulu v'toho. It can put flavor in, but to draw flavor out, so therefore, if you have this non-kli iser, and you put something heter in, even salty, it's not going to pull the flavor out of the kli. Ein malich korseh kol kach lahafli min hakli masher b'lo b'tocho. Now he does say v'dafke b'liyavid aval lechatchila aser. Again, the Rambam himself lechatchila, one shouldn't do this. It's lechatchila you shouldn't put salty heter into a kli iser. Okay. There is the Taz, the Kotan Chavchah, says there are some Rishonim who are Machmeh. He quotes the Tshuva in the Rashba, that is Machmeh, that says the only Heter is when we're dealing with a Kli, that it's only that we're dealing with this is Rabbanim, but this is the Rais, we should be Machmeh, and some disagree. Okay? All right, let's move to Sifyut Gimel. This is okay. Also, Melach Otavlim Shem Bikara Shel Basa, separate salt shakers. Melach Otavlim Shem Bikara Shel Basa, Mutar Liknei Bechola. You have salt or other types of spices, which you put in a Fleisha Kli. You may now pour this. Again, you have a Fleisha salt shaker. You can pour from that salt shaker into a milky dish, okay? And Ramor says, "Who adin im haru b'kli iser? Why the me'achar shem yaveishim einan bolim min hakli? Since the salt or the spices inside are dry, so they're not. Again, there's no blia from it, and they don't absorb any of the taste from the kli iser." And the Shach says, it's called Memdala, that this is not just the B'dievet. Okay, regular salt, regular dry spices, even L'chatchila, you can put it in a Kli Yisr. I don't know why you have a Kli Yisr, but let's say you can put it in a Fleisha Kli and use it, let's say with milk, it's even L'chatchila. Okay, however, it goes back to the same, it's really the same thing we said before. Why? Because, like the Ramah said previously, Ain Maliach Karoseach Kol Ritom, or salt, right? It's salt in a kli. So can't the salt pull out the milchig or fleishig or iser, whatever. The answer is no. Salt, as we said before, salt is not strong enough to bring a flavor out from a kli. The melech korsech is not ad kedei kaf that it can do that. So therefore, as we said before, it doesn't absorb any flavor from the kli, and therefore it's mutter. Even the evidence mutter. Even the evidence it's mutter. At the end, Ramor writes, "V'hamachman achatchila tovel of bracha." I think, I don't know, is that the more widespread practice? I think most people, well, I don't know if it's true. Some people are not going to have separate salt shakers for milk and fleishings, but according to this, you absolutely don't have to. Yeah.
Would that be different if there is liquid?
Yeah, well, if there is moisture, well, usually there isn't, you know. I mean, usually moisture ruins the salt anyway. But, okay.
But like for their time, like my mother, when the kitchen will tell me to make sure I don't use the shaker right on top of it.
Right, because a lot of steam running around there. Yeah, that would be different. Yeah, if there's moisture, it would be different. I'm talking a salt check on the table. I think Lemaisa, most people, I guess today, most people have separate dishes. You know, you have fleshy dishes. Usually a separate salt checker. You know, it used to be it was blue for milk and red for fleshy. But the distinction, we had these little plastic salt checkers. But all right, the machmor tov bracha. But it's not absolutely required.
But like he was saying, the steam can come off the dish on your table as well and get into the salt shaker.
Right, but I guess the assumption is not enough. It's just simply not enough to make it halachically problematical. Maybe that's why Tavol Brach is here. Yeah, right. I think most people try to make such a distinction. Truth of the Pischei Tshuva, it's according to Tezvog, you know, he says that, he said if they're moist, we really should absolutely ask them. Okay? The Shach, the Chachur disagrees, again, it goes back to that distinction between, let's say you have salt, salty iser, it goes back to the previous, a couple of sifim ago, the salty, the Malach the Tafel, right? In other words, you have salty, the case of salty heter food comes into contact with non-salty iser food. Right, so here the gliss is like the non-salty, you know. So whatever, the Pischei Tshuva is machmer. Pischei Tshuva says room to be machmer, certainly if it's moist. Finally, so again, basically, what comes out is that this whole kula is based on melich. That melicha melich kerosach is only in so far. As being able to make the kli absorb, but not to pull out from the kli. That's the nature. Finally, Sifu Dalit. Melech habalua midam, kagon umlichas basar. Venosnua bikdera, or shnosu bikdera basar, maluach bolo adach, ni shishim kenegan melech mutar. The Chaver says that if you have salt, which was used for melicha, for removing dam, again, when you salt food for melicha purposes, what you do is you cover the whole piece of meat. You got to cover the whole surface area of the piece of meat. You don't have to put tons of salt. It's not the same, again, going back to that distinction that we had referred to earlier, we discussed in Basar Chol, how salty melich korsach, how salty is it? So some say it has to be salty as you preserve it. That's a lot of salt. In the olden days, that's how you used to preserve food, right? Didn't spoil it, you salted it. Salting for melicha purposes, you just have to cover the whole surface area. Okay, but in any event, so if you have salt that had been used and therefore it absorbed dam, right? And now the dam, the whole idea of the salt is, what's the idea of salting meat? It pulls the dam out, right? It's also eat dam. So it pulls the dam out, then you wash the salt off and then it washes away down the drain. But now the meat is kosher, right? The whole idea of kashering meat is through salt, and the salt absorbs the dam. Okay, so let's say you have some of that dam gets mixed, it's not that salt rather, by mistake they didn't wash it away, and that salt got, you know, usually after salting the meat, you do what's called the second hadocha, and wash everything away. There's a first hadocha, there's two hadochas, by the way. The first you have to soak the soak the meat to kind of soften it up, so when you put the salt on, it'll pull the blood out, and afterwards you do a second on top. Okay, anyway, but so let's say for whatever reason this salt didn't get thrown out, this salt, melech ha'bolo midam, says the mechaber, kagonim lichas basar, v'nasnuhu b'kedera, and they put that, get it mixed up with some other food in the kedera, so then, osh nasnuhu b'kedera basar meluach b'lo ha'docha, okay, so yesh shishim k'negel ha'melech mutar, you need shishim against the salt, okay? Now, the question is, the Ramah says, but one second, even if you have shishim, it still contributes flavor, right? So Ramah writes, Alfo pisha melech adayin nos in tam b'gdera me'achar she'ena melech oso machmas atzmo ala machmas dam shebesocho the chol makom she'ena oso yachol, back to that rule, the chol makom, and that's how he ends the simonim, the chol makom she'ena oso yachol levech sham ena nesar oso yosim in osro. Again, okay, since the salt is not osur machmas atzmo, the salt is has a blue, it's blue of dam, right? It's only osur because of the absorbed dam. So therefore, if the dam can't transfer, in other words, the dam is what's osur here, right? So the dam is batel b'shishim. Yeah, the dam in the let's go over the case again. You have salt, and right, the salt that absorbed dam. And this salt now gets put into a tarobas, and we said it's batel b'shishim. So Ramah said, but what do you mean? But the salt still gives flavor. You know, the salt is still providing a tam b'kedera. So, but he says yes. But the salt is not what's usher. What's usher is the dam, right? The dam is what's usher. So the dam is batel b'shishim, and the dam that the flavor wouldn't be noticeable, right? It wouldn't be noticeable. So therefore, since the dam is batel b'shishim, so then the salt is going to be batel b'shishim too, even though the salt yields flavor because of the same rule that which is by an iser balua, and that's the rule is ein aneser osir yosim in osro. That which became osir, in this case the salt, became osir through the dam. You can't be more machmir with the salt than you can when you were going to be with the dam, or in this with the dam, whatever the source of the iser was. You follow that in other words, so the absorbed dam is batel b'shishim. The fact that we can still taste the salt, and by the way, you know, usually after melicha you can taste the salt in the meat also. I mean, kosher meat is saltier than non-kosher meat. And when before you cook it up, before you spice it up, kosher meat is salty because the flavor remains. But that's the point that Ramah says. Okay, and this ends with that same rule. When it comes to an iser balua, again we discussed it. Basam chol, yes, an iser balua, not. But when it comes to an iser balua, so the source of the iser is limited to shishim, right? Dam would be batel shishim. So mamela, this salt, which only became usher because of dam in the first place, is also going to be limited to shishim, even though it gives flavor beyond that, because ein aneser yochal osur yosim and osur. Okay, so that wraps up the simon kufei, which I wanted to do. Maybe just a couple of minutes. I'm sure people are very busy. Erev Yontif, just to say a few things very quickly about about Pesach. The Manishtana, I guess, is probably the most famous section of the Seder. Right? I often point it out. You have people say it in every which language. You know, we discussed this, right? There's only different things that go on in the Seder in terms of, but the Manishtana is a central point, at least in the early part of the Seder. So usually they translate Manishtana, at least in most of that I've seen, is why is this night different than all other nights, right? Isn't that the usual translation? Is that an accurate translation, really? You know, it doesn't say Lama, but they ask why. Because Lechor, if you think about it, I mean, if you translate the question of Manishtana as why, the answer is in the question. Why is it night different? Well, I'll tell you why. Because this all other nights we eat chametz and matzah, five we eat only matzah. You just answered your own question, right? Why is it different? Because all the nights we eat all vegetables, Sunday only mar. All the nights we don't dip, here we dip twice. All the nights we sit straight, and this night we recline. So, Manishtana is not really a question, a sense of lama, but rather ma is, that's not explained, the Malbim is not going to explain. Ma is an exclamation. You know, it's like, how different this night is, exclamation point. Okay, how different this night is. You know, in Yiddish, they refer to, maybe you've heard of it, the fear kashas. Okay, right, the fourth question called the fear kashas, right? In Gemara, what's akasha? Akasha is a steer usually, right? Akasha, is just in general, you know this, but to maybe never formulate it in your head, but you know it, right? Sometimes the Gemara will ask, there are two different types of questions the Gemara will ask, right? Sometimes the Gemara will ask a question which is simply a she'ela, right? It's a she'ela. You're searching for information. Menah animili, right? Menah animili. There's no problem. We just want to know what's the mucker, right? The search, what do you mean by this? What, right? That's one type of question the Gemara asked, okay? But then the Gemara sometimes asks, how could it be? There's a Gemara someone else says the other way, right? There's a price that says this, right? So there are two different types of questions in rabbinic literature. One is simply a search for information, and the other is raising some sort of contradiction, some sort of an intellectual or a paradox or something, right? So really the four kashas, the four questions, are really not questions in the sense of searching for information, but rather as a stira. Okay, what's a stira? Okay, because the question, again, this is more or less based on the Haggadah of the Malbim. He says that really what's happening here is what the child, or what we're asking ourselves, is what is the nature of this evening? What is the nature of Pesach night? By which I mean the following: if you were to walk into into a shul on an average shul on Simchas Torah, on Purim, okay, you wouldn't have to be a big genius to figure out that this is a day of Simcha. May not know what it's about, but you look how people are behaving, you look how people conduct themselves. It's a taka, obviously this is a day of a day of rejoicing. By the same token, if you walk into a shul on Tisha B'Av, right, you see everyone sitting on the floor, the lights are dim, and people are teary and everything else, you don't have to be a big genius to figure out there's a day of mourning, of sadness. But Pesach seems to have themes of both. And that's really the kasha of Pesach's themes of both. On the one hand, okay, we do things, we eat matzah, which is not necessarily the tastiest of food. Matzah is it's called lechem only. We pay $27 a box, but it's simple. It's simple food. It's a flour and water, right? I mean, it's matter of fact. I think it's the Orchaz Chaim someplace. He quotes from the Ibn Ezra. So Ibn Ezra was once. Ibn Ezra traveled around. Ibn Ezra on Mikros Gadol and Chumash. He was once in India, and he got arrested for something. While he got thrown into jail for a while, and the food they gave him was matzah. It wasn't Pesach. The food they gave him, the prisoner's food, was matzah. You think it makes a lot of sense? Why? It's pretty cheap. Again, forgetting our shmur and everything else, but flour and water, what can be more cheap than that? And as we'll all know by this time next week, it stays in your stomach a long time, right? So it fills you up, and then it stays there. So it is actually good food for prisoners. Not the tastiest. So on the one end, reading this matzah, reading maror, to bitter. So that's symbolic of avdus. On the other hand, when you recline, when you sit back and you're dipping, food, that's like a benachorin, that's like a rich person. Same thing with hasebo. So in that sense, the manishtana, the question is a stira, and the question really is, what is the nature of this evening? That's really what, this according to this approach, what the questions of manishtana are about. And the answer is, yes, you're both right. And that's exactly what the mission is, Maslov Gnos, Messiah Mishrach. We're supposed to experience what we call modern Hebrew, the Talich, the process. So Avodim Ayinu, when we go through, or whatever, the other opinion, Mitchila of the Hazar, whatever the Gnos is. But you start with with the negative. You say, yes, there are things that we're doing which are commemorative of Tzar, of suffering. And that's a big piece of it. And then we darshan the psukim of Arami Ovid Avi, right? It says we have both, right? We have the crying and the anchovenesom in avoda and so on and so forth, but there's the suffering. On the other hand, there are a lot of things we do this evening which demonstrates being bnei chamin. So that's one thought. I just think it's worth pondering when it goes to the Seder. Another interesting, kind of interesting thing, I think, is the notion of that this was the destiny of the Jewish people, right? Pesach, more than any other night, perhaps represents the destiny of the Jewish people. The Bris Ben Absarim, which we refer to in the Haggadah, Bishamda, right? Shalach HaPavot, and so on and so forth. It's the night of the destiny of the Jewish people that we are somehow designated to be separate or to be distinct. I think that's also a theme kind of to focus on the Seder. We know there are certain natural separations in the world, right? We actually refer to them in brachas. or in bracha, we say Mavil Ben, well, we kosher call out for saying Or L'Choshech, right? That's a natural separation. There's Or and there's Choshech, right? That is also at Mavil. There's also been Kodesh L'Chol, but there's also Ben Yisrael Amim. Okay, there's also that apparently is lumped together. That's what we make of the bracha. I mean, we're not going to say that. Let's see if it's say it's not Motzei Shabbos. We say Mavil Ben Kodesh L'Chol Ben Orach Ben Yisrael Amim, right? That there is some sort of a natural separation. And therefore, the Seder, I think, sort of highlights this notion of our having a distinctive relation with our Kodesh Baruch Hu. How is it manifested? So the Rav used to say that it's significant, it's striking, and I point this out very often. You know, wouldn't it have made sense, if you're telling over the story of Sipur Yisrael, why weren't they masaking a Kriyas HaTorah? Or at least at the Seder, you know, maybe not a public Kriyas HaTorah, should read through Parsha Shmos, Parsha Va'era, Parsha Bo, and it. There it is, right? Read the whole story. We don't do that. At no point do we read. Yeah, we make references to certain psukim. So the whole buildup is through what? The Torah Shabbat Peh. Right? The whole Seder, Vidoresh Parsha Ramah, the Mishnah language is Vidoresh. The whole, it's Torah Shabbat Peh. Right, that's really the theme of the Seder. Torah Shabbat Peh. It's not Torah Shabbat Peh. You bring Raya and Psukim. That's the typical style of the Medrash, right? This means this. Why? Because it says like this. I should never mind that. Right? We bring Raya. But that's the flaw that it's dafka through the medium of Torah Shabbat Peh. Why? Because Torah Shabbat Peh, in effect, is the exclusive domain, so to speak, of Klal Yisrael. Right? The Torah. So the Torah Shabbat Ksav, other people have Torah Shabbat Ksav, they have translations and so on. You know, the Gemara says that when they translated the Torah out of Hebrew into Greek, so there was the Chazal say darkness came down, and says people fast, you know, the 3 days, Ches Tes and Yudav Tevis, you know what I'm talking about, right? The Gemara says, so it was like, you know, this was when there was no choice. The Egyptian branch of the Ptolemy, after Alexander the Great, the Greek Empire split into two parts. Originally 3 parts, ultimately 2 parts. One of which was based in Egypt, one of which was based in Syria. Right? And then, of course, right in between is Eretz Yisrael, naturally, right in the middle, as always. Right? So then there was always struggles between those two. So the Seleucid kingdom, from which we eventually had Hanukkah, Antiochus, that was the group that was in Syria. That's why a lot of people wonder, as a kid, I was one of those also, I used to, you know, who were the enemies of Hanukkah time? Sometimes it was the Greeks, sometimes it was the Syrians, sometimes it was the Syrian Greeks and the Greek Syrians. Like, you know, what do the Greeks have to do with Syrians? You know, well, the answer is because it's the Syrian branch of the Greek Empire. But the Egyptian branch of the Greek Empire, with the Ptolemies, that was Ptolemy, Mark Megillus, Ptolemy Amalek, because one of them insisted that they translate the Torah into, that they had a mace took place, right? They took 70 Talmud Chacham and put them in 70 different rooms. They all came out of the same translation. I once heard the name of Hutner Zechon Abracha was Rashi Chaim Berlin. He said this sort of tongue in cheek. He said, you know, that was a big miracle. It would have been a bigger miracle if they're all in the same room and they agreed on the translation. but Lamaisa said, but that was a darkness. But Lamaisa, the result of that, why was Chazal so upset? What's going to be the problem if the Torah and ultimately the Tanakh is in another language? The answer is because it removes our, you know, control over it in terms of understanding and interpreting with Torah Shabbat Peh. You know, Torah Shabbat Peh it is. And that's one of the reasons why Rabbi Yehuda Nosi was hesitant to write down the Torah Shabbat Peh. There's a lot to say about it. I don't want to take the time on that, but I'll call upon him. At the Seder, the highlight is the Torah Shabbat Peh, right? It's darshan, it's explaining, and the whole idea. And for that, you need a Rebbe. That's you got it to Levincha, right? You need, you know, Kana Ben Shoah, and the father said, teach him how to ask the question, because that requires the sort of like the, you know, the connection of the generations, which is again Torah Shabbat Peh oriented, more so perhaps than Torah Shabbat Ksav oriented. Finally, I just mentioned one other thought. One of the basic chiyuvim of the evening of the Seder is Liros Zatzmo Kiyulu Yatzim Mitzrayim. Right? That's, they say that the people, the Brisker Rebbe said that was the hardest mitzvah to do. It's even harder than Matzah Mar. How do you do that? None of us were ever in Mitzrayim. We're never slaves. How do you do it? So that's a discussion. I hope to speak about that on Shalom Shabbos HaGol. But there's something interesting about that. Or something significant. However we do it, we try to recreate, and people have different things with skits and this and that, you know, or just explain the psukim a certain way. But it has a halachic distinction as well. Now, those who raise the question that the Hallel on Pesach night is very strange. The Hallel on Pesach night is split into two, right? We say the first two prokim at the end of Magid, before the meal, and then the rest we say after the meal. So just imagine for a second that would be, let's say, I don't know, to the Shavuos morning or Sukkos morning, come to Shul, stop to holler at the Shach. After the first two paragraphs, I got to make an announcement, we're going to have Kiddush. Okay, we'll have a Kiddush in the middle of Hallel, and then we'll come back a half hour later and continue with Hallel. You can't do that. You can't even mask it in the Hallel. Okay? So that's one interesting distinction. Another interesting distinction is that Hallel at the Pesach night is said seated. Normally you stand for Hallel. Normally you stand for Hallel. Number three, you usually, never say Hallel at night. But all of a sudden here you're saying Hallel at night. Number four, there's no bracha on Hallel. You usually say bracha on Hallel. But there's no bracha. Well, Yom HaTzmaut, I'm not sure we say bracha. What's the problem with saying a bracha? You tell me we say, but obviously we say other brachas at the same time. We say bracha on the matzah, we say bracha on other things. So why wouldn't we say bracha on Hallel? So all roots in Iran, and the end of Pesach, quotes of Haigon, and he says that there's a fundamental difference between the Hallel of Pesach and the Hallel of all year long, the regular Hallel. Regular Hallel was saying on Yom Tov and so on, and many distinctions. But one is that the Hallel we're saying on Pesach night is supposed to be, in effect, a spontaneous Hallel. Right? And that's why it flows. That's the language of the Mishnah. It's in the Haggadah. Right? We say, Leficha, after you say, Bechol Dor Chayim, Sahadat, Bechol Dor Chayim, etc., Leficha Hanachnu Chayim Lahodos. If you're in the right frame of mind, so number one, the posture doesn't matter. It's supposed to be a spontaneous singing, spontaneous Hallel. Right? Spontaneous response. Say a bracha would almost take away from it. Say a bracha, it's like you're saying, it's like a kid writes, dear grandma, mom told me to send you a thank you card for the nice gift you sent me, right? I mean, if you felt it, you'd do it yourself, right? So you were saying, all right, the Rabbanu Masachin, I have to say how, The whole idea is to feel it, right? The whole idea is that a bracha almost takes away from it, in a certain sense. Because it makes it into, here he's supposed to feel it. And that's why the language of the Rav Kosem Haigon is it's B'toras Omer Shira. Right? It's not B'toras Hallel, it's a Shira. It's supposed to be kind of a spontaneous song. And therefore, it doesn't matter if you're sitting, you can say it at night, you can say it anytime you want. Right? And what about the interruption? What about the... So the Netziv has a very interesting thing. He basically posits that on Pesach night, even the Suda is a form of Hallel. That you're supposed to be eating, not stam, the Chiyuv Suda is Yantif. Okay, the Chiyuv Suda every year, Yantif night. But besides that, the Seder, the Chiyuv Suda, in a certain sense, the Kiyam and Hala, that it connects us to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the physical as well as through the spiritual, as a link. So it's almost, in fact, it's not a Hefsik. It's all part of one long continuum. It's part of Hala in a certain way. And it brings an interesting riot. The Gemara's tell us in Tainus, when there's a famine and a lack of rain in Eretz Yisrael, so they had a series of taniyos, you all know, right? Monday, Thursday, Monday, and more intense. Okay, so the Gemara is, what happens if, and they would say slichas, right? They have a whole mishnah, they have special tefillahs, they have six extra brachas and shemesh, and some of the whole, right, a whole ceremony, the whole slichas, to daven for rain. So what happens if in the middle it starts to rain, Taki? Because Baruch Hu has rachamim, and he hears the people's tefillahs. So the Gemara says they go back home, people break their fast, they eat, and then they come back to shul and recite Hallel to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Kasha is, well, you're already in shul today. Why don't we just keep everybody here? If you just, okay, we'll stop saying slichas, push a button, now we're going to start saying Hallel, and you're in shul already, so finish up the Hallel, then go eat. So she said, no, because the Hallel, the food, you go back and eat now, it's not stop to break your fast. That is a form of Hallel, right? That in a certain sense, even puts you in a frame of mind of Hallel. Okay, the eating, will enhance the Hallel. And I would just add the following, and the Rav said this similarly once as well, and I'll have to say it also, that there's actually a significant distinction between the beginning of Hallel and the end of Hallel. The beginning of Hallel is actually the Hallel, the nickname of that whole Hallel that we say is called Hallel HaMitzri. You know that, right? The Gemara comes, it's called it sometimes Hallel HaMitzri, because it says it's all Mitzrayim. That's really only the beginning of Hallel. The rest of Hallel, most of the rest of Hallel, it's not talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim at all. It's really a Hallel of Basid Lovel. It's a Hallel of the future Geula. Right? Bechatzos Beis Hashem Zuchechi Rishalayim. Right? Looking forward to Anah Hashem Moshiach Anah, looking forward to the Geula Hasidah. The Rav noted that after benching, after the meal, okay, the Seder sort of makes a sharp turn and is now projecting to a future Geula. It's no longer really talking much about the past Geula. There's really nothing in a Hallel and all those songs in Nirtza. talk about that. All those songs have to do with again, Lasid Lavo, the Chagadya, and you know, Adir Hu Yivne Beis Bekarov. You know, it's talking about Elishan Abba Yushalayim. Right, all those things we have at the end of the Seder is projection to the future Gula, and therefore, you know, the sort of the dividing point is the meal, right? And then we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the past Geula, but at the same time we're requesting the future Geula. The Ran says, you know, we have a concept we know called Smichas Geula Tefila. So the, not the Ran, I guess, but it's in the back in Brachas, it's mostly Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rabbeinu Yonah there in Brachas says, what's the idea of Smichas Geula Tefila? So Smichas Geula Tefila basically saying, why should our Tefilas, because when we are Soma Geula Tefila, we're basically saying, when I'm asking for the Geula, I'm showing that I believe in the past Geula. Right? In other words, what better way to emphasize that I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role in the past Geula than to ask him to do it again? If I didn't believe it the first time, I wouldn't waste my time asking him to do it again. So in that sense, the end of the Seder, right, is confirming that I really meant what I said before. I really meant that I acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it. But alright, I'm asking him to do it again. Right, I'm asking now to bring the future Geula. So these are some themes that you can work through. There's a lot of beautiful material, and you know, Baruch Hashem, I don't know if there are more Haggadahs than there are any other Sefer, but it's probably up there. Everybody publishes Haggadah. A lot of interesting things, and if you have time, you should certainly those who are well, anybody, if you're, whether you're married, you have your wife to help, or your mother, your mother-in-law, whatever. People should help. You know, get ready for Pesach also. I just heard yesterday a story. Somebody told me that it doesn't sound like a true story, but it's a good message anyway. That there were Kol at some place in Eretz Yisrael. They were learning. The guys were learning this week, and the Rosh Kol Rosh Yeshiva came into the Beis Medrash, and he said to the guys, "Listen, I just got a list of there's some women who are by themselves who need help getting ready for the Seder. So we have to stop learning to go help these women. I have a list over here. I'll give everybody an address." And they gave everybody their own address. And the women at home. Right? Again, it's a cute story. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But, you know, people should be helpful. Sometimes, I've heard, unfortunately, from Rabbi Vishul, sometimes a mother will complain. Very happy that the children came back from the yeshiva, they're back from the Yisrael, and the mothers want them to learn and so on and so forth, but sometimes there are things to do. You know, you have to, you know, go pick up something from the grocery store, or get the stuff from the cleaners, or do the car, or whatever. Everybody knows people should be helpful. But the main thing, you know, that everybody should enjoy the Seder. Sometimes you have women work very hard, men work very hard too. Everybody's so knocked out, everybody's so tired. By the time you get to the Seder, you miss it. People should try and be organized and rest up so you can enjoy the Seder. Not only the little kids. Usually people are knocked out that the little kids should take a nap. The adults should also try and rest. I strongly urge her. I can't always do it, to lie down for half an hour or something. We'll get the extra bottle of ketchup on Chalamoy. You know, how many times you have to run back to the store? Yeah, maybe we put the whole pace was 1 week more. We buy enough food for who knows how. You know, take it a little bit easier. You know, pick up the extra thing on Chalamoy, then rest and enjoy the Seder. Anyway, everyone should have a Chag Kosher Sameach and a sweet Zisim Kosher Yom. Okay.
Alright. Oh, gotta turn off the recorder. Hello, Russell.